Thank you. May it please the court. Counsel. This case presents two simple questions for this court to decide. Whether the Career Service Board's decision to sustain two charges against Sheriff Deputy Vivian Weeks was supported by competent evidence in the record, and two, whether their decision to modify her discipline from termination to a 120-day suspension could constitute a gross abuse of discretion.
Is the latter decision one that's characterized as an ultimate fact?
I believe it is an ultimate fact, Your Honor.
Then why is our review limited to abuse of discretion if it's an ultimate fact?
The courts in Ramirez v. Civil Service Commission, which cited the case of Stevens v. Civil Service Commission, declared in both of those cases that the level of discipline to be sustained against a deputy or any sort of civil service employee is an issue solely within the discretion of the Civil Service Commission or the Career Service Board, as the case may be. It is their expertise, so to speak, as the court stated. That decision alone, the decision whether to modify, increase, or keep the same, the discipline sustained against an employee, is therefore a decision that is subject only to a gross abuse of discretion review by this court. And that is why the reviews are slightly different for each one. While it is an ultimate conclusion by the court, it is subject to a gross abuse of discretion.
Saying that if we, as a division, were to say that the hearing officer was wrong, we are not at liberty to say that just because we disagree with the outcome?
Well, certainly the court is allowed to disagree with the hearing officer, but the level of review which must be used in determining whether the hearing officer was wrong in modifying the discipline as he did is a gross abuse of discretion. And in this case, there was no gross abuse of discretion. Both the hearing officer and the Career Service Board went to lengths to analyze the issues present in this case, to analyze those things that the department, the Sheriff's Department, presented and the things that the department proved at hearing to sustain what they considered to be the appropriate discipline in this case. Now, the department is in a unique position when it comes to discipline of a Career Service Board employee. They are able to determine both the charges and the aggravating factors that they wish to use to level discipline, in this case termination, against an employee. Now, they leveled several different charges against Vivian Weeks, most of them which were sustained, primarily the excessive force charge and the untruthfulness charge. Both of those were sustained. And I think both parties here agree that that decision to sustain those charges was supported by competent evidence. Vivian Weeks admitted to many of the allegations made against her. She admitted to the use of unnecessary force, and she admitted to being untruthful about her use of excessive force immediately after. And as a result, it's difficult to say that that decision to sustain those is not supported by competent evidence. However, like as I said, the decision to modify that discipline was based on the allegations leveled by the department, which the department could not prove by a preponderance of the evidence once it went to hearing. The two things that the department leveled against her were both the egregiousness, as they described it, of the policy violations, and her past disciplinary record, which was described as a callous and willful disregard for agency rules. Once the department made those allegations, it created its own burden.
Let me ask you about that. The allegations, when you look in the termination letter itself, it talks about the kick and lying as being egregious in and of themselves, not necessarily a kick to the groin or intense kick to the groin, but it talks about the lying and the kicks as being egregious in itself and the prior discipline action. Why aren't we limited to the considerations that appeared as reasons for the actual termination in the termination letter? Why isn't the hearing officer's findings on all these other things inconsequential or immaterial?
Well, the hearing officer's findings are never inconsequential or immaterial. The hearing itself is the first
time. Ever? He can never make findings on irrelevant issues?
Well, certainly he can make findings on irrelevant issues. But in this particular case, when it comes to the findings regarding the violations themselves, his findings are relevant because this is the first time that the department is held to the task of actually proving the allegations that they've made.
Yes, I still don't understand. I don't understand that. We have a videotape of what she did to the prisoner. Under the police interrogation cases, we can review the video and make our own judgment. So what difference does it make whether the department, you know, presented one witness that said she stomped the guy or not? And could the department could have just said, hearing officer, here's the video.
Certainly, the department could have.
Okay, well, why is it different that the department called a witness that may have fluffed it a little bit?
It is different because of the reasons alleged by the department why they determined termination was appropriate in this case. Career service rules dictate that progressive discipline is to be used whenever possible. The purpose of discipline for a career service employee is to correct behavior again if possible. According to the witnesses presented by the department in this case, Deputy Director of Safety Malatesta and the sheriff himself, both stated that there is no zero tolerance policy for either excessive force or unnecessary force or untruthfulness or both. Both testified that each looks at the totality of the circumstances. And when they looked at the totality of the circumstances in this case, they alleged that it was the egregiousness of the violation and her past disciplinary record, which they characterized as a callous disregard for agency rules. And it was those circumstances which they relied upon in determining that they need not proceed with progressive discipline and proceed straight to termination.
What's your view that the hearing officer is looking at this all de novo, takes in what is said and provided as exhibits at the hearing and makes his or her own independent decision on whether discipline is appropriate based upon this standard that if it's based substantially on considerations not supported by a preponderance of the evidence? Is that an accurate characterization?
That is an accurate characterization. It is a de novo review undertaken by the hearing officer in a case at the Career Service Board. The department is required, pursuant to Career Service Board rules, to prove the allegations it has made, to prove both the charges that it is sustaining against an individual, and in this case, to also prove the aggravating factors which it alleged required termination as opposed to some lower level of discipline on the progressive discipline scale.
So let me ask you about the prior disciplinary record. Was there or is there an avenue of relief for an employee to challenge a written or verbal reprimand?
The only avenue available for a career service employee to challenge an oral or written reprimand is what's called a grievance procedure. It is a hollow procedure.
If successful, would that remove the reprimand from the records?
It's a good question, and one to which I don't think there is an answer. Pursuant to rules, an individual can grieve a decision to institute an oral or written reprimand. Beyond that, there is no procedure. There is no requirement that the department respond to it. There is no requirement that the grievance go beyond, anywhere beyond that, other than sort of a conflict resolution procedure, which may be available down the road. It's simply a hollow procedure as far as appealing whatever discipline has been imposed when it comes to oral or written reprimands. But nonetheless,
I take it that's the justification why that the hearing officer could essentially open up the merits of the prior disciplinary record at this hearing.
Well, I believe it's one of two reasons. The second reason, again, being the allegations made by the department in this case. The department certainly didn't state that Vivian Weeks had a disciplinary record that was six or seven cases long. The department alleged that the disciplinary record exhibited a callous disregard for agency rules and a continual pattern and practice of inhumane treatment.
But why isn't that just a characterization of facts? And it is the facts we should be looking at, not the characterization. That's, you know, callous disregard is an opinion. The person could have said substantial disregard, or the person could have said some disregard. Why does that character, it seems to me the tail's wagging the dog. Why is it that characterization you urge us to look at, not what the record shows the discipline was?
And that is exactly what the hearing officer did in this case. And he was required to do that because of the characterization made by the department. Because the characterization was made that this, in fact, was a callous and willful disregard for agency rules. It was hyperbole that the department was engaging in. And they used that hyperbole to justify a decision to terminate and not engage in progressive discipline as called for by career service rules.
The termination letter was the discipline, correct?
Correct.
There is no, using your words, there is no hyperbole in the termination letter. It simply says she's been disciplined 6 or 7 times, correct?
Correct.
Then why do we look beyond the four corners of the termination letter to hyperbole that some witness may have tried to inject into the hearing?
Because the termination letter itself is not a document which is required to expound upon the entirety of the reasoning for a departmental decision.
What's your basis?
The lack of rules which dictate that the department must lay out in detail the entirety of the basis for their discipline when issuing a disciplinary letter. The only requirement in the disciplinary letter is to give notice to the employee of what the discipline is. There's no requirement that the department lay out in detail the reasoning for its discipline, the facts it relies upon, or anything which substantiates the decision itself. It could literally be a one-line letter to the employee letting them know what discipline has been, in fact, instituted against them.
But it wasn't. It was fairly detailed.
But nonetheless, once the employee appeals that discipline to the Career Service Board, the department is then put in a position where it has to prove by a preponderance of the evidence those allegations that it has made.
The allegations in the letter.
Correct. It could be beyond the allegations in the letter. The department is certainly not limited to that letter when it goes to hearing. The department can go beyond that, can give additional reasons, it can give fewer reasons.
All right. Here, did the department give either additional reasons, or did it simply add a gloss, a characterization, hyperbole, in your words, of the reasons that are already in the letter?
Well, I think it was beyond a gloss. The department's characterization of the disciplinary record and the manner in which they stated it was grounds for their justification of their termination decision. Again, the department was required to justify their decision based on Career Service Board rules to move beyond progressive discipline and proceed straight to termination. As a result, they had to substantiate their decision, and they did so by alleging this callous, complete, and willful disregard for agency rules, this history that they said demanded termination in this case. And as a result, the hearing officer was required to look at that evidence, and Vivian Weeks was allowed to present evidence to indicate otherwise, to challenge that characterization.
So in the hearing itself, what sets the issues for the hearing is basically what the city alleges through its witnesses. Is that what you're saying?
That is exactly what I'm saying.
So the issues aren't limited to what's in the termination letter? The factual issues?
No, the factual issues can certainly go beyond the termination letter. There is nothing that requires the department to remain in the four corners of that termination letter when going to a hearing, other than the termination, the disciplinary decision itself. And if it would please the court, I would like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal argument.
Yes. Bailiff, please stop the clock for a moment.
Or would you consider giving him perhaps a little additional time rebuttal, because I do have a question. In the hearing officer's decision, you know, the hearing officer says, well, you know, the purposes of the career service disciplinary rules, you know, is not served by punishing those who acknowledge wrongdoing and sincerely wish to reform where, and they list three considerations. The third one, he says, the totality of the circumstance indicate a reasonable probability of lasting reform by the deputy. What evidence is there to support a reasonable probability of lasting reform by the deputy besides her expression of reform and in the light of 7 prior disciplinary actions?
It's important not to characterize the simple number of disciplinary actions taken against a deputy as any sort of a pattern. There was no evidence in the record and certainly no evidence presented at hearing to indicate that the simple number of disciplinary actions taken against Vivian Weeks over the course of a 7 or 8 year career.
Course of 4 years? It may have been a 7 year career, but they all occurred in a 4 year span.
But again, there's nothing to indicate that that is necessarily an inordinate amount when it comes to a sheriff's deputy or any other career service board employee. The hearing officer obviously heard from the witnesses, heard from Vivian Weeks, and he accepted her testimony on that issue as credible. And the hearing officer has a prerogative of accepting or determining that an individual is not credible or credible. And in this case, he determined that based on Vivian Weeks' testimony, she was credible. And as a result of that, he was allowed to make the finding that she had a genuine interest in reforming herself and making herself better, based in part upon her admissions of wrongdoing and her willingness to improve somewhere down the road. And that is supported by Career Service Board precedent in the past. Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Franklin Nachman, 13975, assistant city attorney representing the city. The issue in this case is actually very straightforward. It's simply whether a sheriff deputy who admitted violating two of the most important duties of the position, first, safe and humane care, custody and control of prisoners, and second, truthfulness, should avoid termination after she admitted kicking a defenseless inmate who was face down on a jail floor and then lying twice about it when asked about it. The hearing officer and the board said yes. The district court said no. That decision was based was arbitrary, capricious, and not gross. I don't know where the gross came from. That's not a standard of review. Arbitrary, capricious, not based on competent evidence, an abuse of discretion and contrary to law. We believe that was correct and it should be affirmed. I want to address a couple of what I believe to be misstatements by plaintiff's counsel. First of all, it is correct that a written reprimand may be grieved and oral reprimand may not be grieved. But the purpose of the grievance process is to get to the bottom of that. And if an employee is successful, then the discipline is expunged.
Is that in the rules? Is that in the, is there a text that's available to find that?
Yes, I believe it is. I mean, there would be no reason to have a process if you could simply ignore it once you went through it.
Any evidence that Deputy Weeks knew about that process?
I don't know. There was a testimony she admitted that she didn't grieve any of the written reprimands that she received. Which goes to another factual setting that was discussed, which was that these incidents that were described were somewhat similar to what happened in this case, involved departing from the truth and filing false reports. And there was certainly evidence that this deputy was aware, and she herself admitted, that she had a duty to be truthful. She had a duty to write a truthful report when it was requested by her supervisor. And several times, despite the ultimate conclusion by the hearing officer and the board, Ms. Weeks admitted that she really didn't have an excuse for what she did.
Do you have any authority indicating that an employee may not attack a prior disciplinary record of grievances at one of these hearings?
Well, we did cite it was a CSA case, the Garcia case, which said that the board, agency was entitled to treat prior discipline as final when it was final, that it shouldn't have to go back 3 or 4 or 5 years to go back and investigate whether the prior discipline was appropriate or not. I think that would clearly bog bogged down the system if that were a requirement.
Was that decided in the context of one of these personnel cases?
Yes, yes, in fact, it was the same hearing officer that decided this case.
So when Deputy Manager Malatesta said she considered totality of the circumstances, that means that you can't go back and discuss or review the prior disciplinary process and what it entailed?
Well,
I mean, did you object to the hearing officer hearing it?
Yes, we did. I mean,
you haven't alleged that there's an error in his reception of that evidence.
It was an error. Plus, we pointed out that.
Did you allege that to the board?
Yes, we did.
The board didn't agree with you.
Well, the board didn't even address that issue, actually. The dissent did. The board didn't even address that issue. It's not even in the board's order. But under the rules, the department is required to take into account prior discipline. Although in this case, both Director Lovinger and Manager Malatesta testified that these were such significant violations of these duties that they would have terminated her even in the absence of any prior discipline. And that leads me to the subject of the question of progressive discipline. As the brief pointed out, progressive discipline is something that is aspired to, but it is not required by CSA rules in order to terminate an employee. You get to essentially what sometimes is referred to in the arbitration context as industrial felonies. And certainly the department was entitled to believe that violating the use of force policy in this matter and then lying about it on two occasions were significant in and of themselves, even in the absence of prior discipline to justify dismissal.
Is there anything in the two witnesses' testimony that would support the conclusion that violating the use of force and lying were the totality of circumstances that were taken into consideration, as opposed to stomping a person in a certain area, things like that?
Well, I think both of them did. I mean, certainly Director Lovinger indicated that it was based on the admissions that she made. They didn't, in fact, there is nothing in the record, and certainly not in the letter that said that whether she stomped or kicked the inmate was material, or whether she kicked him in the groin or in the buttocks. The problem here is that there is a policy that prohibits punishment of prisoners. And it's not a matter of whether you injured the prisoner or you intended to injure the prisoner. That is a policy. And so in effect, it becomes splitting hairs to try to decide, well, is it worse? I think Judge Hyatt was correct. It's really a very little matter. If maybe she was aiming for his groin and missed and hit him in the buttocks, or...
What was the testimony of Ms. Malatesta that it was of some matter?
Well, it was some matter what she said was that the prisoner groaned after he was kicked in the backside. Now, he was drunk. I mean, maybe one advantage to a sheriff deputy is that somebody in that condition may not be in a condition to remember what happened. But it is still, as we said, a potential liability issue. And almost, it certainly is as significant as the act itself was lying about it twice when she had the duty and the opportunity to tell the truth.
Buckman, it doesn't appear to be disputed at all that Deputy Weeks kicked the inmate and that she lied about it.
Yes.
The ultimate question seems to be, what's the discipline that should be imposed? And as I asked opposing counsel, if it's de novo review for the hearing officer, which is apparently what the city has set up, whether good, bad, or indifferent, doesn't the hearing officer get to make that call if there is lack of proof on some substantial consideration that the department felt warranted termination?
Okay, yes and no. The standard for the board under the CSA rules, which is cited in the brief, states that the board and the hearing officer must not disturb an agency's discipline unless it's clearly excessive or based substantially on considerations not supported by preponderance of the evidence.
It's that latter phrase that the hearing officer relied upon.
Well, yes. And I want to go through some of the, and again, as Judge Webb had asked, this is an, these are ultimate questions of fact.
But they're ultimate questions that we can't substitute our judgment for that of the board.
But yes, you can, because...
Where's it? Give me a cite to a case that says a court can substitute its judgment for the ultimate facts as opposed to the agency's determination.
Well, first of all, the board itself noted that the recommendation for discipline was an ultimate question of fact, and it was not bound.
Correct. Why aren't we bound by what the board did, though? Because the board is the agency we're reviewing, not the district court.
But you're still reviewing the ultimate recommendation for discipline, which is an ultimate question of fact. And the case, there are several cases we cited on the distinction between evidentiary and ultimate questions of fact.
I don't think anyone is questioning the distinction between evidentiary and ultimate facts. I think the question is, where's the authority in this level of review to say that a court gets to make a de novo call on an ultimate question of fact as opposed to the board?
Well, then otherwise there would be no opportunity to review. I'm not saying that it's de novo from the extent that you can freely substitute your judgment. What I am saying, what our argument is, that if the board and the hearing officer are going to override the recommendations or the discipline of the agency, then they should have good reasons to justify that. And I want to talk about some of those reasons. As far as proving the most serious allegations, defendant, and again here, has admitted that four of these allegations were deemed to be proved. They're not coming in and saying that it was a mistake that the board concluded that she violated the use of force policy and departing from the truth and all the other ones. The question whether it was not sufficiently egregious, again, is just a gloss. The facts are undisputed. And the testimony of Sheriff Lovinger about the deleterious effects that allowing this type of conduct to occur, that also went undisputed, as Judge Hyatt noted. I think the most pernicious aspect of this was the idea that mitigation for lying, because the sheriff deputy thought, well, if I tell the truth, I'm going to lose my job. If we look at this from a game theory kind of standpoint, what incentive is there in this type of situation to tell the truth, given the justification for keeping the job that was set forth by the hearing officer and the board? You're accused of conduct violating the rules. You have the opportunity to lie or tell the truth. Now, you can lie and hope you get away with it. Or if you don't, you can come back and say, well, I didn't trust my employer, to be fair. This is an open invitation in a situation for employees to lie. And furthermore, I would like to note that in the reply brief, there was some suggestion that there was something improper about a supervisor calling in an employee and asking, with a representative present, questions about the report that was filed by the supervisor. There is nothing, first of all, there's nothing in either the hearing officer or the board's decision that would support that, and there's certainly nothing in the record that would support it as well.
Not even Ms. testimony?
No.
Didn't she testify she felt intimidated and that the supervisor was sitting on the desk in front of her, towering over her, and didn't the hearing officer find that credible?
Well, she found that he did ask her, but these sort of questions. She herself also admitted that Captain Kopeloff's questioning of her didn't justify her lying. But the question was, it was suggested that summoning somebody in and asking them questions about this is not provided for. The actual procedure to investigate an action like this is done all the time. There's nothing improper about that, although there was a suggestion in the reply brief that it was.
Is there usually a Garrity advisement given to the employee first, though?
No. In fact, that was an issue that was raised by the deputy at the hearing, and if you look at the hearing officer's decision, he said no, it did not apply. She was not entitled to a Garrity.
I didn't know it said that. I thought it just noted that no Garrity advisement was given.
We spent a lot of time on that, as I recall, and one of the things that was I recall was that the decision was no. There was testimony that wasn't required, and I'm reasonably sure that's what the hearing officer held. Now, as far as admitting the conduct and promising not to do it again, that's less of a credibility issue than a cultural issue to the department. The department had the right to decide that this person was a risk, that there was a whole record of departure from the truth and filing false reports, and then this particular incident.
Let me stop there. What exactly does the city put in concerning the prior discipline? Is it a piece of paper that says you were disciplined on such and such a date for doing
it? That's something else I want to get to before my time runs out. The letter, we're governed by due process. The suggestion that, and this is from the Loudermill case in the Supreme Court in 1985 going forward, before all this happens, there's a requirement of a pre-disciplinary letter and a pre-disciplinary hearing where the facts are to be set out and the employee has an opportunity to contest those.
Is it pre-disciplinary?
Yes, it is. And it's, it essentially has some of this, it has the same evidence and description at length, most of which was admitted to. But yes, there would be a problem if at the hearing the department decided to introduce a whole lot of other incidents that were not in the record.
Mr. Knott.
I think I'm pretty well concluded. The Roman poet Juvenal once said, asked the question, who will watch the watchman? Sometimes it's been translated as who will guard the guardians. Rule 106, as you know, exists to review acts exceeding jurisdiction or abusing discretion, and it was well served in this case. The justifications for overturning the decision were either based on issues that were non-existent or, and I can refer you, of course, to the brief, misapplication of the law on some of these charges, say with respect to immoral conduct or a member of the public, which in a sense were cumulative of the other charges in the case. We would therefore ask that Judge Hyatt's decision be affirmed and the termination of Ms. Weeks be upheld. Thank you.
Mr. Knott is correct that Rule 106 reviews are there to police for an abuse of discretion. But the review under a Rule 106 review is not that of the agency's decision. The review is one of the department's decision. It is a review of the agency's decision, in this case, the Career Service Board. And it's a very deferential review, as evidenced by every single one of the cases cited by both appellant and the appellee in this case. In every single one of those cases in which this court made a determination, it upheld the board or personnel commission that was making the decision. In not one did it reverse on the grounds and review the department's decision, and it upheld every single time the board's decision in those cases. And it's evidence of the deference given to agencies in their expertise in these matters. And I see that my time is up.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you
both for your arguments this morning. Case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course. As soon as